So I just have to admit, folks, ever since that story that I drummed up out of Breitbart, you know, the one that talked about the Afghan president fleeing in a helicopter loaded with so much cash that they couldn't get any more in it. Ever since that story, I've just been thinking about how I think that we've literally just been played by Russia, folks, on this whole thing. And I've got an article here, and I just want to walk through some of why I feel that way. But there's an article here that's called "Russia is Enjoying America's Failure and Cozying Up with the Taliban." And the first thing about this is just going to clarify how much Russia wanted the United States out of Afghanistan. And it really begs the question, folks, it really begs the question, how much was Russia involved in making this a reality and getting the U.S. out of Afghanistan? So this is what's going to clarify the intent, as if we didn't already know, right? So take a look at this. Again, this is coming from the Daily Beast, and it says, Russian government officials and state news outlets describe the takeover as a total defeat for the mightiest nation on earth. Appearing on the state TV show 60 Minutes, evidently they've got their own, on Monday, political scientist Oli Matveyev asserted that the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan was beneficial for the Russian Federation. He said, Russia's authority is on the rise. The situation is beneficial for us. America no longer matters. He added that Russia should continue to quietly strangle the United States, which is what Putin is already doing, essentially. That's the whole intent of what they're doing. Quietly strangle the United States. So take a look at this. They go on to quote here, Nikita Ishchenko, spokesman at the Russian embassy in Kabul, told the state media channel Russia 24 on Sunday that Moscow had no intention of evacuating the diplomatic mission. The situation in Kabul is tense. But there is no war in the city. There are no threats to the embassy. No evacuation is required. It sounds like they're not even concerned in the least about the Taliban and the violence. I wonder why that is. And that name sort of rung a bell, folks. Remember that article? The ex-Afghanistan president left with so much cash it didn't fit in his helicopter? Well, take a look at this. Remember this guy down here? And they quoted the story. It says, as for the reasons of the collapse of the regime, they are characterized by how Ghani fled the country. An unnamed Russian embassy employee told TASS on Monday. Four cars were packed with money, and they tried to cram another bag of cash into the helicopter. Not all the cash managed to squeeze in, and some of the money was left lying on the airfield. Other Russian news agencies identified the employee as spokesman Nikita Ishchenko, who also reportedly spoke to Reuters. An unnamed Russian embassy employee told TASS, as for the reasons of the collapse, they are characterized by how Ghani fled the country. How much do you think Russia had a hand in ensuring that Ghani fled the country with a helicopter full of cash, folks? I mean, here's the thing. If Ghani were to leave the country, they knew that the command and control would leave with it. In this day and age, folks, how many people deal in cash anyway? I mean, it's typically, wouldn't you have thought maybe Bitcoin would have been something that Ghani would have used because it's untraceable? I mean, who uses cash? Maybe at the last minute, he was presented with a boatload of cash by somebody like Ishchenko. And he took the bait and tried to cram it into his helicopter. And they used the whole thing as a story to kind of show how he just fled the country with as much cash as he could cram in. I mean, this is Russian playbook stuff, folks. I mean, I don't have the CIA or the FBI at my fingertips, but this is Russian playbook stuff. But let's take a look at Trump's actions, which look like they're right out of another Russian playbook. Why? Because most of the dirty work by Trump was done before he left office. And because of the deal Trump later bragged about, he mentioned this. Remember that? It was impossible for Biden to stop it, Donald Trump said. That's pure Russian playbook stuff. Of course they would want something that would continue through the administrations. That's a guarantee for Russia. It was impossible for Biden to stop it. And just to make it easier for Biden, Trump drew down the troops to 2,500. Only 2,500 men were remaining in the country by January 15th. So here's an article that I want to point out to you. It just came out on the 17th. It's by factcheck.org. And it's entitled "The Timeline of the U.S. Withdrawal from Afghanistan." And here it is. So take a look at this. This is an excellent, excellent article. Use it as a reference. So it goes down here. Let's just look at this. March 1st, Afghan President Ashraf Ghani objects to a provision in the agreement that would require his country to release 5,000 Taliban prisoners. He said freeing Taliban prisoners is not under the authority of America, but the authority of the Afghan government. Ghani says there has been no commitment for the release of 5,000 prisoners. 9 days later, under pressure from the U.S., Ghani orders the release of 1,500 Taliban prisoners, but at a rate of 100 per day. On May 19th of 2020, in releasing his quarterly report on Afghanistan, the Department of Defense Inspector General's office says that the U.S. cut troop levels in Afghanistan by more than 4,000, even though the Taliban escalated violence further after signing the agreement. Who signs an agreement? I mean, what's going on here? The Taliban escalates violence after the agreement is signed? September 3rd, 2020, Afghan releases the final 400 Taliban prisoners as required under the U.S.-Taliban agreement, clearing a way for intra-Afghan peace talks to begin. And get this, folks. Kind of a surprise here, but November 16th of 2020, congressional Republicans responding to news reports that the Trump administration will rapidly reduce forces in Afghanistan warn of what Senator Marco Rubio calls a Saigon-type situation in Afghanistan. A rapid withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan now would hurt our allies and delight the people who wish us harm, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said, astonishingly. November 17th, Acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller formally announces that the U.S. will reduce forces in Afghanistan to 2,500 by January 15th. And by January 15th, he's quoted again as saying, today, U.S. forces in Afghanistan have reached 2,500. Then you go on to February 19th. Biden reiterates his campaign promise to bring U.S. troops home from Afghanistan, saying during remarks at the Munich Security Conference, my administration strongly supports a diplomatic process that's underway and to bring an end to this war that's closing out 20 years. Biden goes on to say that he inherited a diplomatic agreement between the U.S. and Taliban that all U.S. forces would be out by May 1st, Trump initially said, May 1st. It is perhaps not what I would have negotiated myself, but it was an agreement made by the United States government, and that means something, Biden says, adding that final troop withdrawal would begin on May 1st. And this is Trump. So on June 26th at a rally in Ohio, the first rally since leaving office, Trump boasts that Biden can't stop the process he started to remove troops from Afghanistan and acknowledges the Afghan government won't last once troops leave. My God. So he knew that the Afghanistan government wouldn't last once troops left. And that's the same thing Russia believed. I started the process, Donald Trump says. All the troops are coming back home. The Biden administration, couldn't stop the process. 21 years is enough. Don't we think 21 years is enough? They couldn't stop the process. They wanted to, but it's a very tough to stop the process when other things. And then July 8th, Biden says this, saying speed is safety. Biden moves up the timeline for full troop withdrawal to August 31st. Biden acknowledges that the move comes as the Taliban is at its strongest militarily since 2001. Biden says that if he went back on the agreement that Donald Trump made, the Taliban would have again begun to target our forces, and that staying would have meant U.S. troops taking casualties. Once that agreement with the Taliban had been made, staying with a bare minimum force was no longer possible. So Trump lost the election. January 15th draws the troops down to 2,500, knowing full well that they would be targets and that it would be hard for Biden to do anything else. What, you know, when you think about this, what could Biden do? So he could either add more troops or he could get the 2,500 the hell out. So, I mean, it's not to say that Biden's not without fault here. I mean, like I've said, I don't agree with the way that it was done. We were there. We should have come out of Afghanistan in a way that made sense. That didn't happen. But this does give a little more complexion to the overall deal. So the Trump deal, where he says it was impossible for Biden to stop it, Trump negotiated without the Afghanistan government at the table. I mean, that's demoralizing, pompous. Trump forced Afghanistan to release 5,000 prisoners against their will. Then he drew down forces to 2,500 11 days before Biden was sworn in. Either Biden could meet the deadline in and get troops out, or he could add more troops and put us in deeper. That was the way Trump left the deal for him. And then Russia gives Ghani cash to flee, and Ischenko is there as a witness to document the whole thing and just make it look that much worse. Afghani forces lose command and control. Afghan falls. Folks, I think we've been played by Russia in more ways than one.